Thank you for tuning in to the FactCheckVaccine.com audio stream podcast. If you find the following information helpful, please share it with others. And now, we begin the audio stream.
Of this past year, I have said this in my house, I've said this outside everywhere I go, that courage is contagious. And this is the virus that we need to spread across our country and around our planet. I'm delighted to be with you here in Tennessee. I flew out from my adopted home state of Colorado because Dr. Simone Gold put out the bat call. And when she says come, you come. And I will be moderating a series of panels with you, our live audience. Give yourselves a hand here. Great to see all of your smiling, healthy faces. And our first panel is going to be an incredible gathering of pilots, doctors, America's frontline doctors, personnel, and even a doctor and a lawyer and a pilot, right? There's so much multitasking here. I joke that when I'm around all of you people, I feel like a slacker. But we're doing this in conjunction you have to give a shout out to WVW-TV and Brandon House and their incredible team. As well as Mike Lindell and Frank Speech, and we need much more of that here in America for sure. So let me throw this over to Dr. Gold, who's going to talk more about the tour that you all have been on and introduce our panel as well. Thank you, Dr. Gold.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michelle. Thank you for being here. Thank you for moderating. I think Michelle Malkin is one of the most intelligent, capable journalists in the business, so we're honored that you're here. We really have an amazing day for you planned. We have just very high-level conversations, the like of which we have not seen over the past year to year and a half, and today that we're going to start with really an incredible conversation with pilots, physicians, and lawyers entitled Freedom of Movement. We're going to talk about the issues that are closest to your heart, which is how can I continue to live free in America? How can I continue to live free, travel, work, enjoy things that we all took for granted until 2020? I'll just take a moment to introduce the panelists today. To my right is Mr. Thomas Renz, attorney. He is America's Frontline Doctors, Director of Litigation, amongst other things. He does several other types of legal work as well, but we're honored that he really is incredibly important to the litigation efforts that America's Frontline Doctors is putting forward. To my immediate right is our Legal Director, Ali Schultz. America's Frontline Doctors is the real ACLU standing up for the civil rights and constitutional liberty of Americans, and we can't do it without Ali. Thank you. To my left is my good friend, Dr. Joseph Ladapo. I would like to joke the way Michelle just joked that he's one of the few people who makes me feel like an incredible slacker, given that he has an MD and a PhD, which is pretty impressive, and he's really... I just want to embarrass you a little bit and say that he's one of the few physicians I met this year who was looking at the problems that we were facing critically, honestly, authentically. He didn't have a particular axe to grind one way or another. In fact, my understanding, I don't want to speak for you, but my understanding was he really didn't think early treatment with drugs like hydroxychloroquine was really the way to go, but he looked at the data analytically and kind of came to his own intelligent decision, which is really what we want doctors to do. And I'm sad to say that that's not the case most of the year, but it's also why I am so honored that you're here and why we've become good friends. So thank you for being here. And I'm honored also today at the first panel, we have two captains. You know, as we know, the ability to travel is just part and parcel of living as a free person in the 20th and 21st century, right? So I always knew that the travel industry was going to be an area where they were going to try to constrict our freedom. So for quite some months now, America's Frontline Doctors has been working with pilots. And we actually have three pilots with us today, two in person, one via Skype. Captain Tom Heemstra, thank you for joining us. And we have Captain Laura Cox. Thank you. And in the corner, we have another slacker over there. We have pilot Jay Flatman, also a physician. So he has a little bit of special in. So he has a little special insight into kind of the vaccine passport issues, things that really concern all of us. And I just welcome our panelists. Thank you for being here.
So I want to open up with Tom and Laura. We're hearing a lot in the news about the commercial airlines imposing policies that essentially segregate pilots who choose to take the vaccine versus those who don't. What kind of atmosphere is that going to create in the skies? And we'll start with you, Laura.
Well, it's already creating some friction between those who have gotten the vaccine and those who haven't, in that the people who have gotten the vaccine can't understand the concerns of those of us who have not gotten the vaccine. In addition, some of the airlines are offering financial incentives to get the vaccine. They're one-time financial incentives. But at the same time, those who are unvaccinated are going to have their flying restricted.
Yeah.
And so your ability to earn a living is going to be restricted.
Yeah.
And it's not just the airlines, it's the pilots union as well, the Airline Pilots Association.
Right, and this is confusing, and not to single out any single airline, but I'd heard from some pilots in Colorado Springs, the adopted home city where I live, who are very concerned because the public posture of the pilots union is to oppose mandatory vaccine policy at the mm-hmm. same time that they're offering and dangling all of these rewards and incentives to get it.
As well as the coercion if you don't get it.
Yeah.
The punishments.
Talk about that.
Well, the punishment is that, and I'll be honest, you know, part of it's going to depend on other countries as far as international flying goes, but some of those restrictions may apply to U.S. cities as well. Domestically, if a city has a reported high level of cases, I, as an unvaccinated pilot, could be restricted from flying to that city. If I'm awarded in our monthly scheduling a trip that goes to that city, my trip could be dropped without pay, and then I would not be allowed out of our normal, what we call open time, to pick up any other flying that would go to an unrestricted city over those particular days. So that's where we're at right now. It's going to, it could severely restrict us. I'm very senior, so I could probably bet around it, but many of our pilots are junior or they're on fleets that go internationally. We have to be concerned about the other countries and their mandates as well.
Right.
It's going to affect us.
Right. Tom, you want to weigh in?
Yes. We already had a little bit of tense relationships in the cockpit just because of trying to find out if people have taken the vaccine. So most guys are professional enough to keep it outside the cockpit, but that tension is only going to increase as the mandatory vaccines start approaching. So the vaccine passports were real concerning to us, especially going into other countries. I've been with my airline for 32 years, so we kind of know what's going on out there. And, mm-hmm. And we want to fight that vaccine passport. First of all, remember when we had the HIPAA? There was a little bit of privacy, right? And so you weren't intimidated in the cockpit, you know, to share any of your health standards or whatever. And then the other tension that we have going on is that the union's not supporting us, the company not supporting us. You know, we're, you know, this fear phobia that's going on and the hysteria around it is just creating, like your point about courage and how important that is. And you know, my PhD is in strategic leadership. And This is anti everything we teach about leadership, what's going on in our country. And I was a F-16 fighter pilot squadron commander, so when we were forced to take the anthrax vaccine, and when we talk about losing pilots, we lost hundreds and hundreds of pilots around the country because of the mandatory anthrax vaccine. And I call this the un-vaccine, because it's first of all, the first lie is that it's not a vaccine, and then the lies build from there. But I testified to Congress as a whistleblower twice about the anthrax vaccine, and it was uncontrolled. Does that resemble what we're seeing out there? It's uncontrolled. Mm-hmm. It's unpopular. Does that resemble what we're seeing right now? Yeah, 40%, 45% won't take the shot, it sounds like, from the data that's coming in. It's unsafe. Does that sound familiar? It's untested. Does that sound familiar? It's unnecessary because it isn't going to work anyway. And then it's unlawful and it's unethical. And those were the points that I made in my testimony to Congress. And we're repeating it all over again. Or that was a platform for them to experiment and do what they're doing now. The anthrax vaccine was experimental then, and that's what we got going on again. So.
Yeah, so history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to flatter you both, and Jay by proxy, who hopefully will join us again soon. But pilots are a special breed of people. In particular, the types of health requirements that you have to meet in order to be employed in the first place. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of testing that you have to undergo in any case, and why you may have, I'm not going to presume, you object to this particular regime with this particular experimental product as opposed to any other medical procedure that you might agree to as a condition of your work?
Well, as an airline captain, in order to fly as a captain, Part 121, that's the FAR, Federal Aviation Regulation, I am required to get a physical from an aviation medical examiner every 6 months. Once a year, there's a EKG done. So one of the things we're seeing with this vaccine in the news and reported to VAERS is the fact that there's a lot of blood clots and cardiac events. So that concerns me greatly. And having been someone who, for an unrelated several years back, had a medical issue and was on a special issuance medical certificate for a period of time until I had proven that my health was restored, it's a lengthy process and it's not easy. And having a blood clot or having a cardiac event could put a pilot out of work for a year or more, or maybe even forever. Our health is our livelihood, and so most of us take most pilots take a lot of care in trying to eat right, sleep, exercise, and maintain our health as much as possible. There are many medications that we cannot take if we're flying. There's all kinds of requirements that we have to meet.
Tom, you want to add anything?
Yeah, just there'll be a lot of hoops that I got to jump through just for these vaccines that we're taking. And, you know, the airline can require us to take yellow fever when we're flying to Africa, you know, situations like that. But that's something that's been a tested vaccine. So just like with the anthrax thing where we lost hundreds and hundreds of pilots, same thing is going to happen here from people that get sick from this vaccine or people that are unvaccinated that we can't fly places because we're unvaccinated. We can't fly with vaccinated people. But then, you know, my long international flights, you know, we're out over the middle of Russia, you know, and there's no place to go really for quite a ways if somebody in the bag gets sick or one of our pilots, you know, or both of our pilots. You know, we're starting to get into some serious medical emergencies in flight, you know, that we need to be thinking about.
And, you know, I'd like to add that the FAA only mandates that pilots take 48 hours off from flying after getting the vaccine. So we know, and the doctors can attest to this, that some people are seeing adverse events a week or more afterward. It may take some time for them to develop the blood clots or the cardiac events. But the FAA says, oh, after 48 hours, you're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would add, every 6 months, we have to take our physicals, you know, so we have to pass the physicals to continue to have our license. So every 6 months, we're putting that job on the line. So, and so a lot of people, I'm sorry, even with the anthrax thing, like, you know, I'll ride on the jump seat, you know, going somewhere, and and we'll get talking about shots or the anthrax thing because the guys are still in the military, and how, I mean, this has happened 36 times, you know, where guys say, yeah, I still got a big knot on my arm from that shot I took 10 years ago from the anthrax thing, or they still say that they're sick from, and the thing is, you know, with HIPAA, we're all afraid to talk about it, or airline pilots are afraid to talk about any sickness they have because they don't want to get turned in and get grounded, you know, so it's all kind of a secret deal.
Yeah, so let's go to our doctors and lawyers, perfect segue. And Dr. Gold, obviously I have to start with you. So, and speaking of U's, this is a scarlet U that is being branded on those who are free thinking and independent and resisting so much of the COVID tyranny and the orthodoxy that's been imposed on this country and around the world over the last year. What legal recourse do these pilots have in resisting that when what you're going to get in response is, well, those are private companies and they can do whatever they want?
We have to start with the fact that we have inalienable rights, not granted to us by the government, but granted to us by the nature of being human, or if you believe in God, by God. The government's role in that is to not allow other parties to interfere with our inalienable rights. So there's common law and inalienable rights to work, to travel, to assemble, and to not have to take an experimental shot. Not only is that an inalienable right, it was codified into law following Nuremberg, Declaration of Helsinki. There is no preceding standard that somebody has to comply with an experimental medication that would supersede an inalienable right over bodily integrity. But if the question's legal, I do want to turn it over to Tom Renz or Ali Schultz. Mm-hmm.
Tom or Ali.
What concerns me the most related to this situation is the fact that they're trying to rush early full licensure of these experimental vaccines. They're not, based on the current timeline and what they submitted originally, they're not supposed to be able to apply until a minimum of October 2022 to have full licensure, or January 2023. And we have information that these vaccine manufacturers have already applied for full licensure, and they might, the FDA might actually be licensing these vaccines as early as next week.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that does happen, it changes the, you know, you can't take an experimental, you cannot mandate an experimental vaccine argument. But thankfully, we know, we have been working to block this from every angle possible. But we also have very smart strategic litigators like Tom Renz, who have already developed a whole line of arguments related to bodily integrity, superseding a state interest, and many other things. Tom?
So, before I put you all to sleep by being a lawyer.
We're wide awake, Tom.
You haven't heard me talk yet. Ask Simone. Now, I think one of the things we got to ask ourselves, I mean, I don't think there's any question that what's happened over the last year is egregiously illegal and unconstitutional. I mean, I could go on and on and on, and I do for a living about this. But, you know, the thing about it is we have to ask ourselves, what should the law be, and why are we tolerating this, right? Right? So right now, let's talk about vaccine passports, right? Have any of you had herpes recently? How's that for you, right? Do we want to be in a situation where our private health information is not private?
No.
Is that where we want to be?
No, absolutely not.
No. No. And, you know, that's something that we learned a little bit about back in the 80s. Now, I'm old and remember this, but back in the 80s, we had Ryan White. I don't know if that name rings a bell.
Yes.
He was a young kid. He had hemophilia. He had to get blood transfusions. He got AIDS. No fault of his own. And this was back during Fauci's AIDS hysteria, which, you know, it's the same guy. He was doing this way back then, too, right?
Yeah.
And everybody was treating this kid terribly. I mean, this kid was discriminated against. Does any of this ring a bell?
Yeah,
of course.
Here's one difference. He was discriminated against for a disease that was killing people. This disease has a 99.9%+ recovery rate. Not that that made it okay. We as a nation stood up and said, this is not acceptable. We're not going to let you discriminate against this kid. It's just not his fault. Well, now we as a nation have been convinced that if you don't want to be experimented on, you should get a scarlet letter. That's what the vaccine passports are. Now, under the Fourth Amendment, I would argue that there's a right to privacy that's very much violated there. I think there's a lot of other things that I could argue, and you'll probably see those in court at some point. But the question for the people watching this is not whether you want to hear who can make the more intricate legal argument, because that's kind of where the law is today, right? I mean, I can go into court and I can say something great and totally sensible, and if I don't say it the right way, some other attorney's going to tear me apart, and you know, the judge is going to throw it out because it's politically difficult. But we the people, we still have a voice, or at least we should, and thanks to platforms like this, we do. So the question you got to ask yourself is not so much, I mean, yeah, it's unconstitutional. Vaccine passports, definitely unconstitutional in my opinion. Right to work, absolutely there's a right to work in my opinion. Freedom of movement, fundamental to our Constitution. You didn't need an amendment that said you were free to move because it was so inherent that no one in their right mind would doubt it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, remember when we all got put under house arrest for a month? Because we needed to stay at home to keep everybody else safe. How in what world did we ever think we would need a law to say that's not acceptable? Didn't we have a constitution? So I think the thing we got to ask ourselves when we think about the law in this is not as much what it is, because we're going to debate that in the courts, but what we're willing to tolerate. Because right now, we've had a lot of people that I think have clearly violated the law, and if we sit on our hands and tolerate it, guess what? They're going to keep doing it.
Yes. No question about it.
Hello, welcome back. Everyone give Jay a welcome back. Hey, Jay, it's... we were asking you with the other pilots about your impressions of the culture and the environment in the skies right now, and you have a unique perspective as someone who's both a pilot and a lawyer. Tell us more about what your main concerns are.
So I wish I was also a lawyer. That would be Dr. Gold, but
everybody's a multitasker. I can't keep all of your degrees straight. I got to go back to school for something. Go ahead.
I will admit that what I'm seeing, I will be quite just really blunt. It's unparalleled in anything that I've experienced before in my life, both professionally and personally, socially. It's just unbelievable how much this thing is being pushed. And it's really kind of interesting because the pilot community, as you probably already know, it's a very healthy community, you know, writ large across the spectrum. It's very healthy. We generally pride ourselves on staying fit because our job requires it, right? It is a requirement, as you've probably already learned, every 6 months for the major airlines. And for me, every year for my contract job, I have to get a physical. And so it's incumbent upon me to be responsible for my health. And this particular movement with the shots has really caused me to question a lot of things from a medical and a pilot point of view. Namely, I'm hearing from my major airline colleagues, and some of them are there, and they can corroborate this or not, whether you are unvaccinated or vaccinated could determine where you go. So that, as we can, you know, kind of understand, is reliant upon the host country or wherever you're going. But it's more important to the United States, because if the major airlines adopt a a vaccine mandating policy, that's going to affect the rest of our country, because everyone wants to travel. This industry, you know, is so important for business and industry writ large that if that happens, it's going to have some ramifications. And what I don't think the industry is really looking at from a medical perspective, and this is not rocket science, but it's out there. The CDC reports the vaccine adverse event reporting system, and they report those numbers every Friday. And you guys have already heard this, and it's really kind of interesting that the numbers of just deaths associated, you know, you can't say cause, but they are associated with vaccines, outstrips every other vaccine for the last decade and a half.
Yeah.
And this is in less than a year. So put that in a pilot's world where they are required by the job to be fit, and now you're just kind of, I don't want to say you're rolling the dice, but if that becomes a policy, who's responsible for that? I mean, if our pilots start to experience that kind of rate of injury, and that's not even the injury rate that I'm talking about, the deaths outweigh the last decade and a half. The injuries, there's no comparison. And as a pilot, we are required to report any kind of event in our health over the course of the previous year. So you can see how this is kind of it's a struggle, because those of us that fly want to remain flying. The industry bosses that don't necessarily fly, they want to adopt whatever policy they think the government, you know, goes along with. So
right.
I think you have a real dichotomy here that's forming.
Yeah.
And I think it's dangerous to start mandating those kind of things where some of those guys that maybe make the policy aren't the ones behind the control sticks.
Right.
And you as a consumer, you want to know that the people at the control stick are not putting themselves at any risk for any kind of events. And from the medical perspective, what kind of events have we been seeing? Reported in the news, we had a hold on one of our vaccines because it was causing some blood clotting disorders. And I can guarantee you, you don't want that to happen in a pilot.
Right, no question about
that. And now you're kind of faced with this unknown, you know, because you really don't want to, from medically speaking, you can't ask about people's vaccine status, and it's not right that you do so. But are those people at the control stick at increased risk for a clotting disorder? You know, that is a question that really hasn't been answered, because the research going back into this mechanism of action for the mRNA technology, and specifically the adenovirus vector, it goes back to 2007 when it was investigated and found to have an increased risk of clotting. So if that science is there, but it's not being exposed to the aviation industry, hey guys, we need to look at this. We need to find out if this is at putting our folks at risk before we really make any hardline decisions.
Right.
And I feel that those questions are really not being engaged with, because, and you can ask some of the other pilots here, it seems that the leadership just doesn't want to open that box.
Yeah. I want to get back to the pilots, but I want to get Dr. Ladapo into this discussion, and more on a philosophical level. I guess you don't have a philosophy PhD yet, but you probably will soon. But this increasing ratcheting of, and this one size fits all of universal mandatory vaccination, and I know you wrote a piece on this for the Wall Street Journal. Can you weigh in on that? Because again, there's blurred lines between what the government decrees, either de facto or de jure, and what these private industries are doing, and there really is you know, very little room to resist when you've got both big business and big government colluding together.
Yeah, I totally agree, and it's so important that we resist the people who feel that that's, you know, that something's not right, something doesn't feel right. Resist.
Yeah. That's right. Raise that roof. Yes.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you step back and you look at it, it doesn't make any sense. It's so controversial, and that's not an accident, you know. You have hospitals with a substantial proportion of healthcare workers who've said no thanks. I mean, this is something that that is not, you know, even though many of the people on many of our public health officials and politicians go on TV and make it sound as though this should be the norm, this is the norm, everyone, you know, of course everyone should take these new COVID-19 vaccines. That's clearly, you know, that's not resonating with a lot of people. And you know, why is it not resonating? Lots of different reasons. A lot of people are uncomfortable with you know, what essentially was sort of the evil environment that characterized this pandemic. Fear, you know, shaming, people fighting each other, just this complete disregard for human rights, rules where people couldn't come into hospitals to hug and hold their loved ones when they're dying. You know, what's that about? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So that's one reason why a lot of people are uncomfortable. And then another reason is that, you know, there's a lot we don't know. You know, just recently, I am glad to see some of these, some of the mainstream journals publishing this type of work. So recently, a journal, Clinical Infectious Disease, published a study that showed that, well, hey, guess what? Turns out the spike protein is circulating around, you know, people's bodies for some, you know, some prolonged period of time, days, weeks, for some people. Well, what does that mean? You know, I mean, that's not normally how vaccines work. And are there any implications for where this protein is circulating around? And it was published in a journal that fortunately is, you know, is essentially the leading or one of the leading infectious disease journals. I was surprised to see it in there. But you know, there's a lot we don't know. There's more that we're going to learn, and not everyone's comfortable with that. So, you know, so it doesn't make sense to be, you know, to be pushing so hard to try to force mandates for this vaccine. It makes no sense. The other piece to consider is that, you know, hey, by the way, you know, cases are low. So for the people who felt that the vaccine was right for them, you know, they've taken it. The majority of U.S. adults have taken it. Cases are very low. What's the problem? You know, why are you still pushing to try and force people who have no interest and are very uncomfortable with the whole situation, with the vaccine, et cetera, to take it? It makes no sense. And it's incredibly important that, you know, the people, like the people here and the people in this room, continue saying that. It is contagious. It's a good kind of contagion to get people to have more courage and voice their own concerns, because it's not right. It's absolutely not right.
Dr. Gold, you've gathered so many people of good faith and incredible integrity and intelligence to send this message out to their friends and their neighbors and their coworkers, leaders in their industry, these politicians. And yet when you speak with grace and confidence and honesty, you yourself have been such a role model of this, the slings and arrows that you face, the deplatforming, the ostracism that comes along with it. Why are the powers that be who've ratcheted this control of us so afraid of good people of good faith telling the truth?
So I actually don't spend a lot of time thinking about people's motives, because I think understanding other people's motives is so complex and we can't even begin to imagine. What I can say for sure from a factual basis is the lies and disingenuity and misrepresentations is so vast, so enormous, I could give such specific examples of things that our government is saying and doing that are factually inaccurate. And I just, that's what I come to bring to the American people. For example, the NIH, the National Institute of Health, literally has on its books to this day that there's no early treatment if you get COVID-19 unless you're hospitalized on oxygen. That's just factually inaccurate. And so this year and a half has seen that, you know, unceasingly. So I'm not going to change my style. I believe in free speech. I actually came to this fight because I see this as a free speech First Amendment fight. It starts with the doctor not being able to talk to the patient not being able to talk to the doctor. How has the doctor been silenced? The doctor was, like myself, threatened that I would be fired if I used early treatment, both by my medical director, this is universal, and also by the governors. How is the patient being silenced? If the patient's been told all day long in all of the media that they see that there's this drug that's essentially snake oil or cyanide, they're not gonna have a conversation with their doctor. So both sides were silenced, and it's just gone from there. You know, Dr. Lodapo happened to just mention, as an aside, I don't know if you caught it, that he was surprised to see that journal article that published this thing. And I kind of chuckled, I don't know if you caught it. He's surprised because, there, in other words, an article that said something truthful about how negative the spike proteins appear to be on your health somehow slipped through and got published. Yeah. I don't know if you heard your like slip of tongue. You know, it's very hard to get the data published this year. We saw the Danish mask study. There's a Stanford mask study. These things were not being able to be published to the American people. So we're just here to speak the truth, and we want you to share it with others.
Let's go back to our pilots, because I want to get this out there and have you explain. There's a saying in your industry, apparently, no medical, no job. And, of course, there's an update to this now in 2021. Either of you want to take this?
Well, probably what you're talking about is the no medical, no job, no jab, no medical, right?
Yeah.
So there's, just most pilots are pretty intelligent and, you know, are trained to be calm and just wait things out, make sure what you really have. And so the lack of testing, you know, doesn't contribute to any peace with making a decision to take the shot. So why don't we wait a couple years or maybe 5 years before we figure out that I'm going to stick it, the jab in my body there. So, yeah, you take the jab, you lose your medical, and then, you know, like Dr. Flatman was talking about too, you know, guys are going to get sick, but just like the anthrax thing, they're going to be sick in secret. They're not going to tell their doc because they want to keep flying.
Yeah.
It's a complicated issue because, like Tom said, you are mandated to report all your doctor visits each time you go in the previous 3 years. And most of the time you're lucky enough just to report, oh, well, I had my annual physical, or, oh, I had a cold a couple of weeks ago, you know, and I saw my family doctor and he gave me an antibiotic. But for the more serious things, and it has been historically true, pilots will hide it because it's their livelihood. And there's really not a lot of safety nets. Some companies have what they call long-term disability policies, but you're talking 50% of your salary. So all of a sudden now you've got a 50% pay cut. And that's after you have a waiting period, but somewhere between 90 days to a year, depending on the company's policies. So you could be a year without income. You have a home, you have wife, children, husband, kids in college, and you know what? How are you going to do all of this when all of a sudden yesterday you could fly and tomorrow you can't? It's complicated. I wear glasses, so what if they mandated all pilots had to have LASIK? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, LASIK is not successful for everyone. I actually have an eye condition that I could not have LASIK. It would be disastrous for me. So I wear glasses. I'm fully correctable to 20/20. I operate a plane just fine. I've been doing it for almost 40 years now, 35 years as an airline pilot. Never bent an airplane, knock on wood. No bent metal. Nobody's ever been hurt on one of my flights. You know, it's a safety thing. And that's what we specialize in. We specialize in safety.
Right.
That's what we do every day. Every day we go out there and we look at the flight, the weather, the condition of the aircraft, and we decide if it's safe to take our passengers in the air. And so I think, and some pilots have more of a tolerance for risk than others, I'll be honest with that. And my tolerance for risk with this vaccine is much less than some other people. And I believe that everyone should be able to make their own choice without coercion or restriction or punishment.
Amen. Bob, you wanted to say something?
I just was going to say, you know, when 40% of the CDC folks or the NIH folks, they won't take the shot, you know. I mean, pilots are a little smarter than that, you know, to see through the fear and phobia that's going on. So,
Dr. Gold, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to step up and say that I've been working, America's Frontline Doctors has been working with pilots now for several months, and we have found them to be an unusually intelligent group, and I learned a lot from them. One is that their entire...
See, I wasn't just sucking up to you. Dr. Gold is too.
It's true. It's been quite remarkable, actually. It's really a pleasure. They analyze things very methodically, very carefully, linear, analytic. They're very focused on risk reduction, which, you know, I didn't really know until I started getting really chatty with them. So when they look at it, and they're saying, listen, the risk, you know, they're looking at the risk in a way like a scientist is, and they're saying the risk, it doesn't really add up here. Right. The other thing just to share is that America's Frontline Doctors, we sent off package of information to the pilots unions, to ALPA, APA, and also British Pilots Union. And we really did not hear back from them. It was fairly disrespectful. We did that as a sign of respect. We sent them serious scientific papers and documents, and we requested their response back. This was, I think, around February or so. So we're still waiting. We'd like to hear back from you. We're concerned about your pilots. We're concerned about your industry. We believe that many pilots intend to exit your field. And we also think, just as a human being, constitutional inalienable rights, that they should be treated with respect as individuals as well.
So you alluded to this, which is the prospect of a pilot shortage. I mean, has it crossed either of your minds, and you've been hanging in there a long time, of just quitting? I mean, the environment in the air is crazy enough already. I mean, there's a viral video of people beating each other up on the plane all the time. And then you've got, you know, the horrible cases of parents with autism whose mm-hmm. children have been kicked off along with the entire mm-hmm. families for not being able to comply with the mask mandate. I mean, how many times has it crossed your minds to just walk away? And also, as an ancillary to that, do you feel that this sort of oppressive environment of constantly being asked whether you've got it or not, you know, and when are you going to get it, and this kind of thing? I've got a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old, and I mean, it's constant, the bombardment on social media and among their friends, and the conditioning is just like through the roof. What's it like for you on a day-to-day basis?
Well, for me, fortunately, where I'm based, the state that I'm based in, we tend to be free thinkers. We're very independent.
Let me know which state that is.
So the people
I could guess.
So the people that I fly with, my co-pilots, for the most part, most of them are very hesitant, if not outright, I'm not going to get it. They want to wait and see. Or they want to. Me, I'm approaching the end of my career. I've only got a little over 4.5 years left before, by federal law, I have to retire. And I was telling Tom a little bit ago that about a year and a half ago, before COVID hit, I was really like, oh my God, I've got to retire soon. What am I going to do? I'm not going to be a pilot anymore. You know, I'm not going to be able to fly anymore. How am I going to stay involved in aviation? Maybe I'll renew my flight instructor certificate or something like that and teach. And at this point in time, I'm just ready to walk away. Now, fortunately, the FAA has not mandated masks in the cockpit. Once the door is closed and we are operating the aircraft, I do not fly with anybody that wears a mask. We literally rip them off as quickly as possible. But in my discussions with pilots from other bases in other states, they are not facing the same limitations on freedom as far as discussing the vaccine. The pilots in other bases, more liberal states, have mostly gotten the vaccine, and they pressure their coworkers about it.
Yeah.
Well, why haven't you gotten it? I don't understand, why haven't you gotten it? And they text me all the time. I've got probably about four or five that text me on a regular basis. Oh, I need to talk to somebody that's sane, you know.
Yeah.
And because we talk about these issues, and we would like to find a way to make sure that not only in aviation, but in our regular lives, that we are able to move about freely, without restriction, because of a private medical decision.
Yes. Yes. Tom.
Might probably need some help from doctors on this, because there's a disease that all aviators get, that once we start flying, you get it in your blood. So I don't know what that's called, but we have a problem. It's hard to let it go,
yeah.
Hard to just give it away and turn back. But it's hard to imagine. You know, I mean, we want leadership in our cockpits, whether you have 50 people on board or 320 people on board, like my airplane there. And so you want somebody that can take all those factors, and I appreciate Dr. Gold and all your work, because and many have reiterated here the importance of truth. And, you know, with a PhD in leadership, I'm trying to understand what the heck is going on here, you know. It's not leadership, you know, and it's not moral. It's unethical, and it's unlawful. How could you vaccinate infants, you know? How could I vaccinate my troops with an experimental drug? It's just abhorrent. And so the lack of leadership, and, you know, I don't want to really put motives on it necessarily, but I have to understand it from somebody that teaches leadership, servant leadership. What is going on here? And I think it's just an absolute lust for power. And
yes. I wanted to read something from the headlines, and I'll have this as an open question, but apparently the airline that bragged about having 100% vaccination of its pilots and flying staff, which is based in Abu Dhabi, has now admitted that they're going to have to subject those employees to booster shots. They were all given the Sinopharm vaccine, and of course one of these Chinese officials sheepishly admitted that it maybe wasn't as effective as they said it was. Have you heard of this story? If you haven't, what's your reaction to that, and what that might imply for the pilots and flying staff here in the United States?
You know, we were touching on motive, and I do shy away from talking about motives, but it must be stated up front that the financial windfall to the pharmaceutical companies from selling the whole planet.
Yes.
So far, this is a very interesting business to be in, is manufacturing vaccines. So I had no particular issue with vaccines. I didn't really think about it at all until, you know, a year ago. I've been vaccinated. My kids were vaccinated. It just wasn't an issue I really thought about. But in the last few months, obviously, I've been self-educating a lot. And let me just share some of the things that are factually true. In 1986, our government set up a law that said that vaccine manufacturers have no liability for their products whatsoever, none.
Correct.
So that's actually very astonishing. Let's take a moment and pause, that if you were driving a BMW and you had an accident with that BMW and it was BMW's fault, you could sue BMW, right? So that does not exist for vaccine manufacturers. Now, what I found very interesting about that is that the number of vaccines proceeded to skyrocket as soon as that law went into effect. So what do I mean? That's why I think there's a little bit of a disconnect between what people think is going on and what's actually going on. So back in 1986, when this law came to pass to give immunity, there were 11 vaccines, right? So these were the common. You think of measles or mumps, rubella, polio, a couple of others. And that was it. That was then. Now, fast forward, from 1986 until now, the vaccine industry was about $1 billion. In today's dollars, that would have been about $2.5 billion. But the vaccine industry now is about $40 billion, and there's about 73 vaccines that children get from 0 to age 18, right? So we went from 11 to 73. And my plea is that if we didn't have this abnormal intervention, which incentivized vaccine manufacturers to just keep selling us things that wouldn't have happened. So this is the backdrop against which 2020, you know, is. You have to understand 2020. So now we have this new vaccine, which all of a sudden, putting no negative motive on anyone other than the profit motive, which is not particularly negative, it's kind of neutral, it could be for good or for ill. But when you have a profit motive where you can sell your good really to the entire planet, any age, any country, any human being, anywhere, not have any liability, make a lot of money, and then you can sell booster shots every year, which Pfizer clearly said is their intention, right? You have to look at the problem in that light, and you have to stand up for your right not to get caught in the middle of the crossfire.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Allie.
And in addition to what Dr. Gold was just saying, the people who are deciding if the vaccines are approved and at which age they're approved and if they're fully licensed are these same people that are receiving money from the pharmaceutical companies. So that there are just such massive conflicts of interest. One of our doctors, Dr. Angie Farella, just submitted a letter yesterday to the vaccine advisory committee meeting that is coming up on June 10th related to pediatric vaccines and if they're going to approve them for a lower age and if they're going to fully license them. And something interesting she noted in her letter, which is public and fantastic, is that she there was a vacancy on the board. And the board, the rest of the board argued and waved in this doctor, James Hildreth, who also received between $2.5 and $3 million from pharmaceutical companies to his vaccine program at his medical college. The same person who's deciding if we're gonna have to buy those or have to give those to our kids to go to school is the same person who gets to decide what to do with that $3 million budget.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely unbelievable. And what is so ridiculous is that they said the reason that this particular person had to be waived in urgently as a voting member is because this person is the only one who has skill sets and of this capacity. And it's actually relatively difficult to find someone of these types of skill sets without financial conflicts of this sort. And I know several people who do not have government conflicts and who only receive funding from $25 donations from speaking to provide truth across the country.
Gotcha. Absolutely. Tom, I want to get you to weigh on this too, and we're going to be doing a whole full panel on the temporary restraining order and motion and a lot of the legal efforts and endeavors that you are spearheading. But my investigative mantra for much of my journalism, whether it's for documentaries or books or columns, is follow the money to find the truth. And one of the things that you all have been doing so well is making transparent these conflicts of interest. Can you talk a little bit more and flesh that out? And I know probably every single person in this audience already knows this, but for many of the people who are watching, who are just becoming enlightened and the fog is lifting, talk about Moderna and the NIH.
Oh boy. And I'm going to tell you something that it's not just Moderna, but let's start out with Moderna.
Yeah.
So I've got a contract sitting on my laptop. I've looked at a little bit. And says that Moderna, the intellectual property rights for this vaccine, they're co-owned by NIH, Fauci's crew, right?
Yeah.
They're co-owned. Moderna has a grand total, let me add this up, let's see, 0 approved drugs on the market, and it's worth over $20 billion. Why is that? Well, you know, they do make a COVID vaccine. Now, you notice that even though Pfizer and Moderna are both mRNA vaccines, Moderna's always approved second, right? I wonder why. So let me tell you what's happening here. Back in the 90s, a law was passed, PDUFA, right? PDUFA is an acronym, but PDUFA basically created a pay-to-play system with FDA. So it's not just Moderna, and here's why. basically, if you want to get one of your prescription drugs FDA authorized, you write a big fat check to the FDA. Otherwise you're going to be waiting a good long time, and you know, we'll get to it at some point, and you know, all that research money you're spending, well, you know, maybe we'll look at it. PDUFA made this totally legal. They've also got laws that allow for co-ownership of intellectual property between DHHS personnel and private entities, right? That's why you see this NIH Moderna thing. The fox is guarding the hen house. I don't know how else to say that. I mean, it's as horrible as you can imagine. Why would Fauci be out here promoting something that has a 1% risk reduction? Exactly. These, just FYI, and I'll leave to the doctors here who can explain this a lot better than I can, this 95% effective drug, okay, that's a load of garbage. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you as a simple lawyer, right? They get into the epidemiology, that's not what it is. That's statistical magic. The reality is there is a 1% risk reduction from these experimental drugs. We're experimenting on our children. Why is Fauci promoting this? I've heard over and over again he's the smartest guy in the room. He is the smartest man on the planet. I know, MSNBC keeps telling me. So if he's that smart, I would think he would know what absolute risk reduction means. It's a pretty basic thing. I mean, it's just simple math. Even a lawyer can figure it out, right? So this guy knows. Why would he be doing that? How much money and power is he getting off of this, right? I mean, there's literally, it is a violation, a clear-cut violation, in my opinion, of the principles of Nuremberg to experiment on children, on anyone, without informed consent. We didn't even test this on these kids when we decided that 12 to 15-year-olds could get it. We didn't test it on the 16 to 18-year-olds. I mean, the idea that there was a test is a joke. It's a joke. We'll give this to a few kids, and you know what? Oh, look, none of the kids got COVID afterwards. Well, let me tell you what that is. This bottle of water, this is keeping the tigers out of this room, and if you take it home, I'll sell it to you for $1 million. You can take it home. There'll be no tigers in your house. The Moderna vaccine didn't keep the kids safe. The kids were safe anyways. The kids aren't dying from this.
Bravo, Tom.
And Anthony Fauci, who invested in gain-of-function research, I've got the documents. Anthony Fauci, who helped fund the people who created this horrible, horrible, monstrous disease. Anthony Fauci is now making money off of this. He's the one that's supposed to be protecting your health. I hope you all feel safe after hearing this.
Follow the money, find the truth. Well, we've got a couple minutes left in this panel, and so I want to give the pilots the last word, and we have really enjoyed your company, those of you in the live audience. Freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of conscience. Give us your final thoughts, and then let people know what, especially the supporters of America's frontline doctors, what they can do to help support the pilots like you who are brave enough to put your voices and faces out there.
Yeah, well, I don't feel like the unions have supported us. I don't think the unions have supported us like we talked about earlier. So we don't get much help there, and we don't get, I guess, any legal help is really what we need, because we're going to be discriminated against, and then we're going to be divided, and as you're seeing in the American public. But we don't want that in our cockpits, We don't want it in our companies. It's a horrible culture to come to work for anybody if you experienced any of that yourselves there. So, we're good stewards of our own health. And, I thought this thing was on the 4th of July first, so I... It's for medical freedom, dadgummit, that we're here. What happened to my body, my choice, right? you know, stick stuff into my body without me deciding that it's good for me and giving you approval to do that, informed consent, yeah, all that stuff. So I guess I can't emphasize enough. I know it's a little bit of repeating, but that's where I come from.
Yes, and, you know, the airlines listen to the public that buys tickets on them, okay? They're in the business to make money. And they want your money. They want you to fly places. They want you to go places. Look at the promotions that they are doing today to get people back in the air, talking about how safe it is, how they're sanitizing, they're cleaning. And they are doing a lot. I mean, our airplanes have actually never been cleaner. I'm serious. I sometimes when I would fly as a passenger, I would be, wow, you know, this is really nasty. I'm sorry that people have to put up with this. We're in the service business. And as a result, your opinion matters because you speak with your dollars. Let your favorite airline know how you feel about this. Write them. They have customer service links. Write them and let them know that you want to be able to travel without restriction, without having to show an airline your private medical information.
Thank you. We appreciate you. We'll be thinking about you when you're flying the unfriendly skies. Dr. Gold.
Yeah, I just want to add that we believe, we want to support people like independent pilots who just want to be able to fly and assert their own constitutional rights in their own lives. So that is one of the main things we're working on at America's Frontline Doctors is our legal work. So we welcome anybody to support americasfrontlinedoctors.org, aflds.org. We also have a petition on our website. We urge you to sign that. The purpose of the petition is to let employers know how you feel about mandates like this. Petitions like this directly help pilots, for example. We have, I think, 700,000 or 800,000. We like to get up to 1 million. And then we intend to go back to the airlines and the airline unions and show them there's at least 1 million Americans who've signed this paper saying that they don't want this kind of intrusion into their rights. So americasfrontlinedoctors.org, aflds.org, to help people.
Yes. Everybody go there. Spread the word. Wow. That flew by. I want to thank Laura Cox, Tom Heemstra, Dr. Latipo, Dr. Gold, Tom Renz, and Ali Schultz, and thank all of you, WVW-TV, Frank Speech, Mike Lindell, americasfrontlinedoctors.org. Follow them on their entire tour. Share that information. Make your voices heard. Raise hell. Thanks for joining us. Yeah.